The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance online at supervalue.ie.
Now, while most of us will be spending Christmas with friends and family, seeing those we haven't seen in a long time are celebrating with those that we live every day. Spare a thought for those who may not be as fortunate. It's a particularly difficult time of year for elderly people who may not have someone to celebrate with. Well, Ronnie Delaney, Ireland's oldest Olympian and Friends of the Elderly Ambassador, is calling for every one of us to introduce ourselves to an elderly neighbour this Christmas. And Ronnie joins me now. Ronnie, it's great to have you in.
John, thank you for having me.
And tell us about this role that you perform as ambassador.
Yeah, well, I'm really the voice of Friends of the Elderly on radio because I do their ad, and I'm astounded at the voice recognition. I didn't realise I'd have such voice recognition. So this is very helpful to them because they're a voluntary charity. They get no government funding, but really their message is not so much that as, and I say it in the ad, I say, do look up an elderly neighbour, do say hello. And the theme that they work to is a theme of love. They want to give affection to the old and neglected, those who don't have friends calling, those who don't have relations. So they have this whole volunteer base, and they call. Their main function is to call and visit the elderly.
Mm-hmm. And they do great work, don't they?
Yeah, I think I'm very pleased to be associated with them because they have a number of different programs. They're not one of the higher recognised charities, so therefore I feel I'm delighted at my stage of life to be able to help them and to help them in their objectives. They have so many different programs. They have transition year programs for schools. They have phone calls. They obviously, with only 400 volunteers, they can't visit that many homes. Mm. So, or visit hospitals or visit nursing homes or wherever they are. So they have a number of people who do phone calls as well. And then they have a fun shop. It's a French garment shop, and this is where they began their fundraising. It's at 25 Bolton Street, and they sell all these designer gowns from, maybe not quite designer gowns, from Paris. So it's quite an interesting concept. That's where they originally got their funding. Yeah. So now it's by way of a radio appeal. Yeah. I do a letter to about 60,000 homes, and it all helps. And they really run the show. They've only two full-time executives. So I think, John, you'll agree, they're the most meritorious charity to be involved
They are indeed. And they also have Christmas parties at their community centre in Bolton Street. And our man, Colin Flynn, went out to meet some of the partygoers.
I met to enjoy the afternoon. It's great to see the old faces. I was lovely. A lovely meal and everything. Patricia Flynn. I was 81 on the 16th of May, 1933 I was born, so I'm 81.
And why did you join Friends of the Elderly all those years ago?
Oh, well, it's just somewhere to come to, you know. Years and years ago when I came in here.
And was the reason that you wanted to join Friends of the Elderly? Lots of people
have
different reasons.
Somewhere to come every week, you know. I lived on my own for 11 years, because he passed away, and my son passed away 6 months later.
Oh,
but I kept myself busy. He was going on his 44th birthday. He had an aneurysm in his head, and he took a heart attack.
Oh, God help us.
It was hard to pass away, lose a child.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure, I got on with my life, but you never forget. But my family kept in touch. They brought me out for meals and things like that. But I kept myself busy.
Patricia? It was great meeting you today.
And it was great meeting you. Happy Christmas, Happy New Year to everybody.
You too. Patricia, you're talking to the entire nation now on the radio. Hundreds of thousands of people are listening to you now.
Listen, I reared 5 kids, and I always said, I'll get through this. And I did the same with the operation. I'll get through this. And I did. And after 7 weeks, the doctor came over and shook my hand. She didn't think I was going to make it. The doctor, she came over and shook my hand. I fought through it. I was 3 weeks in intensive care.
And you're smiling now and you're happy.
I'm doing all right.
Hang on now, what's your name?
Joan Whelan.
And where are you from, Joan?
I'm originally from Marlborough Street, and when them days we used to, the women around, the children around, all chased the elder boys, and we were always waiting outside for the elder boys to come.
And the telegram boys, remember the telegram boys doing
I only know the altar boys.
So let me get this straight, you were chasing around the altar boys?
We were, yeah.
Why the altar boys?
They were all very holy. We thought they were very holy. We thought they were very holy, but they weren't holy.
Oh my God, hey.
We had to have a clean, sir.
They were more earthly than holy.
Why was it? Was it because they were bringing you closer to heaven? Or?
Oh, because they were so saintly. When they were on the altar, they were lovely until they came outside on the back of the Pro Cathedral. Yeah. And then anyone knows what they used to do.
Cross bar on the bike.
That was only in my childhood when I was 12 or 13. I thought the altar boys was gorgeous. But when I grew up, I knew the difference. Now, I met my husband in the Catholic Young Man's Association in Hindon Street. He was a roofer, and Lord rest him, he died at 39 years of age. We were married 15 years. He dropped dead and woke a heart attack.
And then when did you start coming to Friends of the Elderly then?
About 6 years, 7 years, more. Time flies, you see.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yes.
Are you having fun here?
You're enjoying
always
yourself.
Have fun here.
What is it?
The elderly when I retired, and I'm 80 now in January, so... That was 65 when I was 65, so that'll tell you all them
God, you
years.
Don't look at 80.
Oh, thank you very much.
I joined you when I was 70.
Now, this guy beside us is a soft soaker. He's after telling Helen, she said she's going to be Asian, and he's after telling Helen she doesn't look Asian. Now, what are you having? You're not in a bar. You get a brandy if you're in a bar.
What are you having, ladies? Drinks
brandy,
on me.
Brandy.
And come here, where to now? Are we all going to Coppers, to the nightclub, or what's the story?
We're going over to Lily's Bordello.
Lily's is okay by me, yeah. Too.
So you can come with us.
How much wine did you have?
Good sup, but could do it another little sup.
How long have you been in Friends of the Elderly?
Well, I've been a good many years, you know, and I love it. And it's great company, and you're mixing around with people.
And why did you join?
I live on my own, and it's company, you know, and that. And you see that girl there?
Yep.
I couldn't ask for a better friend.
That lady over there?
Rose.
Are you best friends?
Yeah, we are. We're good friends, yeah.
I saw you had an important visitor as well, dressed in red.
Santi!
Santi was here.
Yeah, Santi was here.
What did you say to Santa?
Oh, he didn't come over to me at all.
No wonder, you're on the naughty list. He said, I'm avoiding you.
And that's Colin Flynn, among the party goers at the Friends of the Elderly Community Centre in Bolton Street here in Dublin. And it's clear from the people who we were talking to there that company is so important, Ronnie, isn't it?
Yes, I've gone to one of their... I think they have a meeting every Wednesday. And the fun, as you heard, and the humour, it's so Dublin, isn't it? And I love going along, and I love being part of their celebrations.
Mm-hmm. And this time of year especially, we made the point earlier about everybody, you know, crowds of people and how they look forward to Christmas, but there are those who are on their own and they face that possibility.
Yeah, it is loneliness. You know, the issue is not so much poverty. It's not as if we're handing out food parcels. We're giving them a little bit of love and a little bit of joy and the fun of coming to a location that they know. I think at this time of the year they've two or three dinners leading up to Christmas. But all year round they have the club, as they call it. The club is open to them. And it's lovely to see them coming along and having such fun. Mm-hmm. When I was there myself, I dare tell you, they asked me to sing a song. And what could I do? I had to sing a song. I haven't been asked to sing again.
we'll ask you to sing now.
Leaving myself open to that.
What did you sing? Tell us.
I sang Dublin's Fair City.
Oh, very good.
Appropriate.
Very good.
And the other one I would have liked to have known the words of, but I don't. I only know the words of Dublin's Fair City was Dublin Can Be Heaven. I love Noel Pearson singing that.
Oh, yes, yes.
So that's my era, John.
Yes, they're your party pieces, the two of you.
Yes.
Yeah, the two of those songs. And you're looking well yourself, Ronnie.
Thank you.
You're nearing that significant landmark in your life, the 80th birthday, I believe.
Yes, yes. Yes, I'm just fortunate. I enjoy good health, I have energy, and I have the opportunity to contribute to a number of areas. I still have a lot of involvements that keep my mind very active. For example, I'm president of the Villanova Alumni Association. We have about 70 alumni here in Ireland. We have marvellous people like Senator Eamon Coughlin. We have Sonia O'Sullivan, who doesn't live here at the moment. And then we have Americans who come over here and live. And I also am president of the Irish Olympians Association, and Pat Hickey, the president of the Olympic Council of Ireland, is very supportive of that as well. And we have programs and we do major undertakings. And I also help a few other areas like Lung Alliance, Irish Thoracic Society. I've helped them promote positivity in terms of getting lungs tests because, you know, a lung test is so simple and so many diseases and calls to GPs and visits to hospitals are related to lung disease and troubles with your lungs. So if someone has a cough, do go and get a test. And it's a very simple, non-invasive test.
So all that involvement then, Ronnie, do you think that's a big contributor to your good health?
Yeah, I think so. I think I believe what really contributes to your good health is lifestyle. I wouldn't be fanatical on exercise at all. I'd be the opposite. When I was 26, when I retired from sport, I stopped running. I figured everyone would be out there trying to race me, so there's a lot of common sense in it. Yeah. But it is lifestyle. It's sort of eating well, sleeping well, and very moderate exercise, and having a happy family environment. I was blessed in the sense that my wife Joan, my children, my grandchildren, I get an awful lot of love. As an elderly person, I get an awful lot of love. And that is the secret. I think the primary one, I would say, is using your mind, continuing to use your mind. I still have a small business. It's not making any money. It hasn't made money for years. But it's an excuse to go into the office and do all these other things. Because in terms of the world, as an Olympic champion, you get contacts from those you've competed against, all the great athletes I competed against, and there are autograph hunters everywhere in the world. And how they get your name, or how do you they know you're still on the planet? And I get maybe an average of maybe 3 or 4 letters a week, so they have to be looked after too. So I keep myself busy.
And are you friends with any of the athletes who you ran with back in the 50s?
Yeah, I must say, John, I'm very close friends. For example, in the last week, I would have sent Christmas cards to all my contemporaries. The guy who was third to me, Klaus Ritzenheim, John Landy, who was governor of the state of Victoria, Brian Hewson, who many people at the time saw racing here in Ireland. And all these people are friends, and that's the beauty of sport in my era, the amateur era. We raced each other, we raced hard, but afterwards we socialised, and then we became friends. So I've had the privilege of going back to Australia and America, the main theatres in which I ran. And when you go back, one time, this is very interesting, I think it was the year 2000, they brought back all the finalists from the 1500 metres, and they brought us back to open a environmental resort called Curran Cove. The guy organising was Ron Clark. He broke something like 27 world records in his time. So everyone thought, Ron Clark, you're mad. These old dossers, who wants to see them? But the sort of coverage we got was the spring may have gone out of their steps, but the sparkle is still in their eyes. Now, that was a beautiful occasion. On that occasion, we had Murray Halberg, who's an Olympic champion after me in 5,000 metres. And my wife, I think she sang some lovely song to him under the bridges of Paris with me. I think embarrassed him. So I asked him not that to do to my close friends again. But I also, the more recent athletes, so the Johnny Walkers. There's a new book about him. It's Peter Snell. Peter Snell and the Kiwis Who Flew. That's a new book. And it's a great read because it's my era. And it was a beautiful era of innocence, amateurism and friendship.
And I think you say that when you're used to, you obviously were someone who ran indoors an awful lot. And I think the norm back in the day was there was no such thing as a smoky smoking ban, so you'd be fighting your way through the smoking.
Oh no, they were very clever. Just before the start of the race, the mile, which was the featured event, the announcer would say, "We're now about to have the featured event, the mile run, the Wanamaker mile. Ladies and gentlemen, will you stop smoking?" You know, it made absolutely no difference. But smoking wasn't an issue then. You didn't even think in terms of ingesting smoke. The only thing, probably your tracksuit would be smoky after you'd been in there for an hour or so. But that was the fun of it. That era was beautiful.
And you smoked a pipe, did you?
I did. I didn't smoke when I was running. Yeah. In fact, I had to learn how to smoke a pipe. I was invited to take part in a play representing Villanova University and I think the state of Pennsylvania. I'm a very bad actor, so don't ask me about that. But I had to learn how to smoke a pipe. So I remember getting a pipe and it made me terribly, terribly sick. And during the play, I had a lot of fun because the guy opposite me, Liam Cavan, I think his name was, he was a great actor and I was a dreadful actor. And in the middle of it, I'm supposed to light the pipe and I can't get the light the pipe. And I turned to him, going out of character for a moment, I ran out of matches. So I said, "Do you have a match?" He was absolutely shattered. I remember another actor was in Chekhov's play, the Cherry Orchard, and he was a posh, sort of great actor. And I complimented him, having seen him act, and he looked at me and he said, as an actor, you're a great runner. So that summarizes my acting career.
Your acting career. And you were talking about athletics back then and the camaraderie and this sense of being connected to people from all over the world. Of course, it's a different case now, or it's a different situation now, isn't it, Ronnie? We've had recently, in the last few weeks, these revelations about Russia and the doping of athletes. How do you view it all?
Yeah, well, I think it's very much a contemporary issue. It wasn't an issue back in the 50s, 60s. I don't know when drugs first began to appear. I think some of the Russian athletes, not surprisingly, may have been taking drugs way back then, but they would have been steroids. And ladies would take them to build their bodies. So fortuitously, I didn't come out of that era. But I think it's getting to crisis stages now. But in Ireland, we're lucky. We have a very good sports council. We have a very good Olympic council. And they have excellent doping programs. And there's a lot of random testing going on. Then the major Olympic body has an organization called WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency. It does an immense amount of work. But having said that, I have to be honest and I have to be upfront. It is trying to be pushed under the carpet. It's not being addressed aggressively. There's so much money at stake, you know, so much wealth at stake. I'm appalled at the idea of the alleged taking of drugs by the African athletes, particularly, who come out of a very impoverished background. Mm-hmm. And one always thought that these were the great athletes that they are because of living at heights and fearless minds. And yet the story is now, in the ranking of athletes who are tested and who score, the Russians top of the list, but the African nations are in there as well, which I find a terrible disappointment. Mm-hmm. And it's not just athletics. I think it's across the whole spectrum. Paul Kimmage has done a superb job in Ireland and in the world and in Britain, writing for the Sunday Times, writing for the Independent, as you know. He has been courageous. He's come out and he said, drugs are rampant in selected sports. And he confronts it and he gets a lot of stick for doing that. But he's doing a superb job. And Paul, I congratulate you and I commend you.
Mm. Is it the case, though, that athletes are one step ahead of the anti-doping organisations?
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be the athletes. If you can picture the contemporary athlete. When I was an athlete, no manager, a trainer, no doctors, no physios. You were just yourself. Today, you have a manager who's a vested interest in you. You have a doctor who medically, everyone scores off you. Everyone makes money off you. So this innocent young athlete is encouraged, okay, if you want, you can't compete unless you take stuff. And therefore, it's not just the athlete, it's his environment. Now, having said all this, I'm sure there are a lot of people listening out there and they're saying, oh, but our sport is clean. And of course, there are sports who are clean. And fortuitously, we have the structure here in Ireland through the Sports Council and through the Olympic Council that we are testing and we're trying to cut off this involvement in drugs, which leads to death. Mm. I mean, I remember contemporaries of the 80s, not contemporaries, but great athletes. I call them contemporaries because I knew them and I would have done things that they did. And one or two of them just passed away. Mm-hmm. Flo Jo, for example, she allegedly was on drugs. I don't know what other ones, but a lot of athletes who died young, there was always the suspicion that they were on drugs. If any young person listening out there, be aware of the consequences of taking drugs.
Sure. And of course, some Irish athletes have had their performances in particular races reassessed. In other words, they've got into medal positions retrospectively following the revelation about doping and some of the athletes involved.
Yes, yeah, that's rightly so. I would think, I think Rob Heffernan got an upgrade. Dervil O'Rourke got an upgrade. I don't know what other ones I get an upgrade on. But it's not the same. I think they will say themselves, it's not the same. We were denied our flag being raised in the Olympic arena. We were denied the moment of winning the medal. And getting it retrospectively is not the same. Mm-hmm. I have personal views, which I have to say, John, I'm not fully up to date on all this. I'm a bit like you. I read about it and I'm appalled by it. But the one gap I think that's a serious one and I think has to be addressed, and I talked about them not really facing up to the reality. One thing I'd love to see is more permanent banning. You know, you ban an athlete for 2 years or 4 years. In an athletic life, 2 years is nothing. People now run well into their 30s. My generation, we stopped mid-20s. But 2 years, and then they come back. I don't know. I can't follow that. Logically, I can't follow that. I think if you're found guilty of a serious infringement of the doping laws as they're there, and the laws are very clear, if you're found seriously infringing those laws and your management and your doctors, I think you should be banned for a much longer period.
Lifetime ban?
Personally, and again, I have no role, even though I'm president of the Irish Olympian Association, I have no role in these matters. Mm. I'm not on the Sports Council. As president of the Irish Olympian Association, I have no role. Maybe I have a role in articulating, but it's my personal opinion. Sure. It's not an Olympic opinion. And the people who run sport, in their wisdom, they say short-term punishment is enough. Ronnie Delaney, Olympic champion, says banned for life.
Banned for life. Well, Ronnie, thanks a million for coming in this morning. How will you spend Christmas yourself?
John, can I, for answering that, may I just say thank you so much, and thank you on behalf of Friends of the Elderly, and thanks for the pleasure of talking to you always. How will I spend Christmas? I'm blessed, as I said earlier on. You said, asked what the secret of long life is. I'll be with all my grandchildren and my children on Christmas Day in one of our homes, and the whole lot of us will be there. I think someone told me there'll be 26 of us. There'll be two turkeys involved, so that'll be my Christmas Day. I look forward to it. Listen, happy Christmas to you, John.
And as you say, because it's main reason you're ostensibly here this morning for is Friends of the Elderly, and I suppose the message is for those who think or know people who are on their own celebrating Christmas, that they should keep an eye out to their elderly neighbours.
Thank you, John.
Ronnie, thanks.